Book 11th. Imagination, How Impaired and Restored. Long time hath man's unhappiness and guilt detained us. With what dismal sights beset for the outward view, and inwardly oppressed with sorrow, disappointment, vexing thoughts, confusion of opinion, zeal decayed, and lastly, utter loss of hope itself, and things to hope for. Not with these began our song, and not with these our song must end. Ye motions of delight, that through the fields stir gently, breezes and soft airs that breathe the breath of paradise, and find your way to the recesses of the soul. Ye brooks, muttering along the stones, a busy noise by day, a quiet one in silent night. And you, ye groves, whose ministry it is to interpose the covert of your shades, even as a sleep, betwixt the heart of man and the uneasy world, twixt man himself not seldom and his own unquiet heart. Oh, that I had a music and a voice harmonious as your own, that I might tell what ye have done for me. The morning shines, nor heedeth man's perverseness. Spring returns, I saw the spring return, when I was dead to deeper hope, yet had I joy for her, and welcomed her benevolence, rejoiced in common with the children of her love, plants, insects, beasts in field, and birds in bower. So neither were complacency nor peace nor tender yearnings wanting for my good through those distracted times. In nature still glorying, I found a counterpoise in her, which when the spirit of evil was at height, maintained for me a secret happiness. Her I resorted to, and loved so much, I seemed to love as much as heretofore. And yet this passion, fervent as it was, had suffered change. How could there fail to be some change, if merely hence, that years of life were going on, and with them loss or gain, inevitable, sure alternative? This history, my friend, hath chiefly told of intellectual power, from stage to stage advancing, hand in hand with love and joy, and of imagination teaching truth, until that natural graciousness of mind gave way to overpressure of the times and their disastrous issues. What availed when spells forbade the voyager to land, the fragrance which did ever and anon give notice of the shore, from arbours breathed of blessed sentiment and fearless love? What did such sweet remembrances avail, perfidious then as seemed? What served they then? My business was upon the barren sea. My errand was to sail to other coasts. Shall I avow that I had hoped to see? I mean that future times would surely see the man to come, parted as by a gulf from him who had been, that I could no more trust the elevation which had made me one with the great family that here and there is scattered through the abyss of ages past, sage, patriot, lover, hero? For it seemed that their best virtues were not free from taint of something false and weak, which could not stand the open eye of reason. Then I said, go to the poets. They will speak to thee more perfectly of purer creatures. Yet if reason be nobility in man, can aught be more ignoble than the man whom they describe, would fasten, if they may, upon our love by sympathies of truth? Thus strangely did I war against myself, a bigot to a new idolatry, did like a monk who hath forsworn the world, zealously labour to cut off my heart from all the sources of her former strength. And as by simple waving of a wand, the wizard instantaneously dissolves palace or grove, e'en so did I unsoul as readily by syllogistic words some charm of logic ever within reach, those mysteries of passion which have made and shall continue evermore to make, in spite of all that reason hath performed and shall perform to exalt and to refine, one brotherhood of all the human race through all the habitations of past years and those to come. And hence an emptiness fell on the historian's page, and even on that of poets, pregnant with more absolute truth. The works of both withered in my esteem. Their sentence was, I thought, pronounced. Their rights seemed mortal, and their empires passed away. What then remained in such eclipse? What light to guide or cheer? The laws of things which lie beyond the reach of human will or power, the life of nature by the God of love inspired, celestial presence ever pure, these left, the soul of youth must needs be rich, whatever else be lost. And these were mine, not a deaf echo merely of the thought-bewildered recollections, solitary but living sounds. Yet in despite of this feeling, which howe'er impaired or damped, yet having been once born, can never die. 'Tis true that earth, with all her appanage of elements and organs, storm and sunshine, with its pure forms and colours, pomp of clouds, rivers and mountains, objects among which it might be thought that no dislike or blame, no sense of weakness or infirmity, or aught amiss could possibly have come. Yea, even the visible universe was scanned with something of a kindred spirit, fell beneath the domination of a taste less elevated, which did in my mind with its more noble influence interfere, its animation and its deeper sway. There comes, if need be now to speak of this, after such long detail of our mistakes, there comes a time when reason, not the grand and simple reason, but that humbler power which carries on its not inglorious work by logic and minute analysis, is of all idols that which pleases most the growing mind. A trifler would he be, who on the obvious benefits should dwell that rise out of this process. But to speak of all the narrow estimates of things which hence originate were a worthy theme for philosophic verse. Suffice it here to hint that danger cannot but attend upon a function rather proud to be the enemy of falsehood than the friend of truth, to sit in judgment than to feel. O soul of nature, excellent and fair, that didst rejoice with me, with whom I too rejoiced, through early youth, before the winds and powerful waters, and in lights and shades that marched and countermarched about the hills in glorious apparition, now all eye and now all ear, but ever with the heart employed and the majestic intellect. O soul of nature, that dost overflow with passion and with life, what feeble men walk on this earth, how feeble have I been when thou wert in thy strength. Nor this through stroke of human suffering, such as justifies remissness and inaptitude of mind, but through presumption, even in pleasure pleased unworthily, disliking here and there liking, by rules of mimic art transferred to things above all art. But more, for this, although a strong infection of the age was never much my habit, giving way to a comparison of scene with scene, bent overmuch on superficial things, pampering myself with meagre novelties of colour or proportion, to the moods of time or season, to the moral power, the affections and the spirit of the place less sensible. Nor only did the love of sitting thus in judgment interrupt my deeper feelings, but another cause more subtle and less easily explained, that almost seems inherent in the creature, sensuous and intellectual as he is, a twofold frame of body and of mind. The state to which I now allude was one in which the eye was master of the heart, when that which is in every stage of life, the most despotic of our senses, gained such strength in me as often held my mind in absolute dominion. Gladly here, entering upon abstruser argument, would I endeavour to unfold the means which nature studiously employs to thwart this tyranny, summons all the senses each to counteract the other and themselves, and makes them all, and the objects with which all are conversant, subservient in their turn to the great ends of liberty and power. But this is matter for another song. Here only let me add that my delights, such as they were sought insatiably, though 'twas a transport of the outward sense, not of the mind, vivid, but not profound. Yet was I often greedy in the chase, and roamed from hill to hill, from rock to rock, still craving combinations of new forms, new pleasure, wider empire for the sight, proud of its own endowments, and rejoiced to lay the inner faculties asleep. Amid the turns and counterturns, the strife and various trials of our complex being, as we grow up, such thraldom of that sense seems hard to shun. And yet I knew a maid, who, young as I was then, conversed with things in higher style. From appetites like these, she, gentle visitant, as well she might, was wholly free. Far less did critic rules or barren intermeddling subtleties perplex her mind. But wise as women are when genial circumstance hath favoured them, she welcomed what was given and craved no more. Whatever scene was present to her eyes, that was the best. To that she was attuned through her humility and lowliness, and through a perfect happiness of soul, whose variegated feelings were in this, sisters, that they were each some new delight, for she was nature's inmate. Her the birds and every flower she met with, could they but have known her, would have loved. Methought such charm of sweetness did her presence breathe around, that all the trees and all the silent hills and everything she looked on should have had an intimation how she bore herself towards them and to all creatures. God delights in such a being, for her common thoughts are piety, her life is blessedness. Even like this maid before, I was called forth from the retirement of my native hills. I loved whate'er I saw, nor lightly loved, but fervently, did never dream of aught more grand, more fair, more exquisitely framed than those few nooks to which my happy feet were limited. I had not at that time lived long enough, nor in the least survived the first diviner influence of this world, as it appears to unaccustomed eyes. I worshipped then among the depths of things, as my soul bade me. Could I then take part in aught but admiration, or be pleased with anything but humbleness and love? I felt, and nothing else. I did not judge. I never thought of judging, with the gift of all this glory filled and satisfied. And afterwards, when through the gorgeous Alps roaming, I carried with me the same heart, in truth this degradation, howsoe'er induce, infect in whatsoe'er degree of custom that prepares such wantonness, as makes the greatest things give way to least, or any other cause that hath been named. Or lastly, aggravated by the times, which with their passionate sounds might often make the milder minstrelsies of rural scenes inaudible, was transient. I had felt too forcibly, too early in my life, visitings of imaginative power for this to last. I shook the habit off entirely and forever, and again in nature's presence stood, as I stand now, a sensitive and a creative soul. There are in our existence spots of time, which with distinct preeminence retain a vivifying virtue, whence depressed by false opinion and contentious thought, or aught of heavier or more deadly weight in trivial occupations and the round of ordinary intercourse, our minds are nourished and invisibly repaired. A virtue by which pleasure is enhanced, that penetrates, enables us to mount when high, more high, and lifts us up when fallen. This efficacious spirit chiefly lurks among those passages of life in which we have had deepest feeling that the mind is lord and master, and that outward sense is but the obedient servant of her will. Such moments, worthy of all gratitude, are scattered everywhere, taking their date from our first childhood. In our childhood even, perhaps our most conspicuous. Life with me, as far as memory can look back, is full of this beneficent influence. At a time when scarcely I was not then 6 years old, my hand could hold a bridle. With proud hopes I mounted, and we rode toward the hills. We were a pair of horsemen. Honest James was with me, my encourager and guide. We had not travelled long, ere some mischance disjoined me from my comrade, and through fear dismounting, down the rough and stony moor, I led my horse, and stumbling on, at length, came to a bottom, where in former times a murderer had been hung in iron chains. The gibbet mast was moulded down, the bones and iron case were gone. But on the turf, hard by, soon after that fell deed was wrought, some unknown hand had carved the murderer's name. The monumental writing was engraven in times long past, and still, from year to year, by superstition of the neighbourhood, the grass is cleared away, and to this hour the letters are all fresh and visible. Faltering and ignorant where I was, at length I chanced to espy those characters inscribed on the green sod. Forthwith I left the spot, and reascending the bare common, saw a naked pool that lay beneath the hills, the beacon on the summit, and more near, a girl who bore a pitcher on her head and seemed with difficult steps to force her way against the blowing wind. It was in truth an ordinary sight. But I should need colours and words that are unknown to man to paint the visionary dreariness, which while I looked all round for my lost guide, did at that time invest the naked pool, the beacon on the lonely eminence, the woman and her garments vexed and tossed by the strong wind. When, in a blessed season, with those two dear ones to my heart so dear, when in the blessed time of early love, long afterwards, I roamed about in daily presence of this very scene, upon the naked pool and dreary crags, and on the melancholy beacon, fell the spirit of pleasure and youth's golden gleam. And think ye not, with radiance more divine, from these remembrances, and from the power they left behind? So feeling comes in aid of feeling, and diversity of strength attends us, if but once we have been strong. O mystery of man, from what a depth proceed thy honours! I am lost, but see in simple childhood something of the base on which thy greatness stands. But this I feel, that from thyself it is that thou must give, else never canst receive. The days gone by come back upon me from the dawn almost of life. The hiding places of my power seem open. I approach, and then they close. I see by glimpses now. When age comes on, may scarcely see at all. And I would give, while yet we may, as far as words can give, a substance and a life to what I feel. I would enshrine the spirit of the past for future restoration. Yet another of these, to me, affecting incidents, with which we will conclude. One Christmas time, the day before the holidays began, feverish and tired and restless, I went forth into the fields, impatient for the sight of those two horses which should bear us home, my brothers and myself. There was a crag, an eminence, which from the meeting point of two highways ascending, overlooked at least a long half mile of those two roads, by each of which the expected steeds might come, the choice uncertain. Thither I repaired up to the highest summit. 'Twas a day stormy and rough and wild, and on the grass I sat, half sheltered by a naked wall. Upon my right hand was a single sheep, a whistling hawthorn on my left, and there, with those companions at my side, I watched, straining my eyes intensely, as the mist gave intermitting prospect of the wood and plain beneath. Ere I to school returned that dreary time, ere I had been 10 days a dweller in my father's house, he died. And I and my two brothers, orphans then, followed his body to the grave. The event, with all the sorrow which it brought, appeared a chastisement. And when I called to mind that day so lately past, when from the crag I looked in such anxiety of hope, with trite reflections of morality, yet in the deepest passion, I bowed low to God, who thus corrected my desires. And afterwards, the wind and sleety rain and all the business of the elements, the single sheep and the one blasted tree and the bleak music of that old stone wall, the noise of wooden water and the mist which on the line of each of those two roads advanced in such indisputable shapes. All these were spectacles and sounds to which I often would repair and thence would drink, as at a fountain. And I do not doubt that in this later time, when storm and rain beat on my roof at midnight, or by day when I am in the woods, unknown to me, the workings of my spirit thence are brought. Thou wilt not languish here, O friend, for whom I travel in these dim, uncertain ways. Thou wilt assist me as a pilgrim gone in quest of highest truth. Behold me then, once more in nature's presence, thus restored or otherwise, and strengthened once again with memory left of what had been escaped, to habits of devoutest sympathy.